And our special guest this hour, Dr. Greg Little. We will take phone calls with Greg as we talk about Edgar Cayce and some of the remarkable things he has done in his life. He died because I think he was in these trance states so much that it just, you know, took all his energy with him. But we'll be back with your calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Greg Little with us. Greg, I have a book on Edgar Cayce's health remedies, and it's just amazing. How was he able to do this? Did he tap into something? Was he getting spiritual help? What happened?
Cayce, when he was in a trance, he was asked that, and wherever the information came from, he could essentially tap a sort of universal bit of knowledge. As far as the health readings, though, you brought that up. What he could do, or what a part of him would do, is when he went into this trance, when he went into this self-hypnotic trance, he became like a psychic diagnostician, where he could send consciousness to an individual, no matter where they were, and scan their body. And through scanning their body, he would get information about what was wrong with them. And then in his reading, he would say, yes, I have the body, and then he would scan it and say what he finds, and then he would give a remedy. So it was like mentally he could scan individuals' body, almost like a CAT scan or something. Although, I mean, that sounds ridiculous, but he could mentally scan people as a psychic diagnostician, and I love that term. And his health readings have been analyzed. There's been a lot of articles published about him in medical journals, and in general, all of the studies have the same numbers. They all say his health readings were somewhere between 83% to 89% accurate. It does not mean, though, that the 11% that's not considered accurate was inaccurate. It's just they couldn't get enough information to even find out what happened to the individual. So almost everything they could follow up on, Cayce was accurate on.
Did doctors tell him to slow down because of health purposes?
Well, doctors didn't, but the reading itself did. Cayce did health readings on himself, and they said over and over at the end, you need to do one reading a day. You need to rest. You need to be away from it a while. But actually, doctors are the ones that got him overloaded with requests for these readings, because doctors started studying Cayce and writing about him and presenting results on him at several conferences. And at those conferences, then, there would be reporters, and the reporters would then write a story. And that made Cayce so famous that he got bags of mail coming in from people who said, oh, my son is really ill and he's dying and the doctors can't do anything. But if you got 10 or 20 or 30 of those letters a day, what would you do? So Edgar felt terrible, and he spent as much time as he could answering those letters. So he would do reading after reading. And back in those days, they had to send letters out. So it burned up his time, and it physically exhausted him. And toward the end, he died at age 67. Toward the end, the readings told him, you must slow down, but he just couldn't do it.
Was he a wealthy man, Greg?
No. Edgar was not wealthy. He was actually a photographer. He won several awards as a photographer. He never charged for his health readings. He did start an organization in Virginia Beach, which is now called the Association for Research and Enlightenment. They started a hospital, which the hospital had trouble. And, of course, after the Depression, it certainly did, which, by the way, that's something Edgar Cayce predicted. That's one of his great predictions. He predicted the Depression. He started in 1925 saying something was going to happen to the stock market very, very badly. And then in 1929, roughly 6 months before the bad time in October happened of 29, the big crash, he told several people in readings that something very, very dire was going to happen in the stock market. And he actually used the words, the warning has been given. So that is one of the predictions that was real specific.
All right, let's take some calls here for you. Let's go to Barry. No, he's not ready yet. Let's go to Ed in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hello, Ed.
Yeah, George, you're right. And also, mothers in World War II wanted to know how their sons were doing. Were they, you know, alive? And he couldn't say no.
That's right.
I had polio as a child. I spent 100 years ago, I spent literally 50-some years. I spent a lot of time on the health readings. I got two quick things I want to tell you, and I got two very specific questions for Greg. I love that I found Greg tonight because I didn't know about him. One, the doctors, years ago, one doctor took advantage of me. He said, what's the longest muscle in the body? What's the shortest? The shortest, I think, is in the lip, is 52 letters, and he nailed it. And also, they would say, like Greg says, they could get on the phone and say, I have the entity, some address in New York, Detroit. He'd say the blood pressure. He'd say temperature 101.2, pulse 90. He knew all of it, and so he's very accurate. I have two questions, Greg. One, I saw something very important supposed to be found under the paw of the Sphinx in early 2000s here, and I saw something on some video talking about the guy over there is not letting people in some room under the Sphinx, under the paw, that there may be something. And Casey, I thought, said something very important would be found. And the other question, on these geographical changes, I think in some readings he referred to that, no, some of these may actually show up as psychological changes, like going from segregation to accepting integration in the South and so forth. I'd be interested in your opinion on what I saw there.
Well, the first thing, yes, you talked about the right paw of the Sphinx. Casey said that beneath the surface there is a hall of records. He was very specific about what was in that hall of records, 32 stone tablets, some mummies, some linens, some weapons, and so on. That was one of the hall of records put out by the Atlanteans in 10,500 B.C. There has been a lot of research done there. There's been everything from drilling to ground-penetrating radar. You probably saw a show on History or maybe Nat Geo, and you saw Zahi Hawass doing some sort of drilling. Hawass was the head of Egyptian archaeology for many, many years.
At that time, yeah.
Yep.
He got tossed out when Mubarak got tossed out.
Yes, that is correct. Hawass actually was very good friends with Mubarak's wife, which had a lot to do with them. They just didn't like his connection to Mubarak.
That's right.
But Hawass did effectively shut down the research around the Sphinx and under it. There is an anomaly under it. That is the word that they use. It's probably a chamber. There is a tunnel system that runs under Giza from the northwest side toward the Sphinx, under the Great Pyramid, discovered by Andrew Collins a few years ago, and it has not been explored. The Hawass actually had the entrance into that tunnel system. He had a gate put on it, an iron gate, so it was shut off. But it's never been explored all the way as far as we know. So that's the paw of the Sphinx. That's what you're talking about. In terms of the health readings, you mentioned some of Casey's predictions about the future. I cannot speak to the one about the segregation. I don't recall that. I would not be surprised. Like I said, there are so many readings, and no one has ever put all of it, summarized all of it. You can access it all and online in a computer if you're a member, but I don't think anybody's ever summarized everything. What people do is what we do. It's like I took all of his readings that involved mounds and wrote a book about it. We took one involving South America, and we wrote a book about that. Lots of people have written books about his spiritual stuff and his health stuff. But his health readings, yes, those are considered exceedingly accurate. How he did that is beyond me. I have actually seen people try to do this and been around some, and I've never seen anybody do it to the same way that Casey did, with the same degree of accuracy. But there's just some astonishing stories about the health readings and things that went on with it.
Is it possible, Greg, that Zahi Hawass, when he was in authority, has already been into the Hall of Records? They did it quietly one night?
I don't think Zahi did. You know, Zahi Hawass is directly connected to the Casey organization. You'll see things written in books about that. Zahi has been at the Virginia Beach Casey organization many, many times. It was the head of the Casey organization, whose last name was Casey, who got Zahi Hawass into the University of Pennsylvania's PhD program in archaeology. And the ARE actually was going to pay for Zahi's tuition there. The Egyptian government apparently, this is what I have heard, I don't know if this part is true, but they were embarrassed by that and decided to foot the bill for his tuition. But Zahi has real connections to the ARE. But he has stopped a lot of that research over there, and of course he's not in power now. But they're not interested. The Egyptians are now not interested in doing anything like this. They are mainly interested in Islamic history, not prehistory, before Muhammad, for example. They're looking at mainly Islamic history. So there's not a lot being done in Egypt right now.
All right, let's go to Barry now in Rock Hill, South Carolina. Hey, Barry, go ahead.
Hi, George. Great program as usual. I mean this, Greg. Excuse me. Greg is one smart cookie.
Sure is. How are you feeling, by the way? How the teeth?
Well, the teeth are going to be okay, although I'm going to have them done. But I'm just telling Tommy, we had a pretty long conversation about my macular degeneration. I saw my doctor day before yesterday.
Oh, boy.
And it may not be but about 5 more years, and I won't be able to see it all. But
take those supplements.
And stem cell research is far enough along, but it may not be quite in time for me. If I was 50 years old, it'd be okay, but 76 is a little too old. But, hey, listen, I got a wonderful wife. She takes me everywhere I go. I love spending 24 hours a day with her anyway. So, hey, who cares?
Man, you can't beat that.
I'm telling you, you might as well look up because it's harder to look down. Anyway, for Greg, of all the... let me tell you real quick, George. I was on hold a couple of weeks ago for that Kevin somebody from the ARE.
Yeah, Kevin Tedeschi.
Yeah, I couldn't remember pronounce his last name, but I've met him before. I've been to the Education Museum 4 times.
Oh, great. Good for you. He's a good guy.
Yeah, we used to live on the Outer Banks, and I did, and we would drive up the beach. The highway only goes so far in North Carolina, and then it dead ends, and you have to drive on the beach for about 15, 20 miles, cross into Virginia, and then you're on Virginia Beach. So, anyway, I met him and talked to him some there a little bit. We talked about biology and chemistry and stuff, so forth. But anyway, for Greg, let me get to the question. Of all the different mounds and tens of thousands of them, Greg, what do you think is the most fascinating one that you've ever come across or heard about? And what about the skeletons? What fascinates you the most about them?
Okay, the most impressive mounds. I actually put out I have an encyclopedia of mounds. It's called the Illustrated Encyclopedia of Native American Indian mounds and earthworks. But the most impressive ones in my top 10 list, Newark, Ohio, and even the people that I've taken there, Andrew Collins from England, others, when they go there, and Andrew lived in the middle of Avebury for years, which is the biggest stone circle in the world, and when he saw Newark, he was dumbfounded. He said, why in the world would anybody build this? There's nothing like it in the world. And it's probably the most impressive archaeological site in the world, with the exception of a few pyramids, maybe in Egypt. But those are, to me, the earthworks are even more impressive. So Newark, Ohio, there is a place called Mound Builders Golf Course. You go there, and there's actually a tower you can walk up and look at it. There's a circle and an octagon. It once had a walkway that had double lines or parallel lines of earth that went 56 miles long.
Wow.
to another circle and octagon. The circle is a circular earthwork that encloses 30 acres. The octagon encloses 50 acres, and they're connected. And inside of them are truncated pyramids, pyramid mounds. And as Marzulli said, in the first half, they actually traced and measured the moon's 18.61 year cycle. And you could predict eclipses with it, among other things. But it's incomprehensible to describe. You cannot get an idea of what these are like talking about them or even looking at a survey, because you just can't get the enormity of it. You've got to stand there and look at it. And I'm sorry with the macular degeneration. So if you're going to do this, do it while you still got some eyesight left. Go and take a look at Newark, Ohio. It's just incredible. As far as the skeletons go, the proof is there is no doubt that there are many 7 to 8 and even above 8.5 to 9 foot tall skeletons recovered from American mounds by archaeologists. Do not believe the skeptics that say all of it is mismeasurement and all of it is exaggeration. It is not. And I'm not talking about newspaper articles when I say that. I'm talking about archaeological publications. They just do not like to talk about them for their own reasons, whatever they may be.
Why hasn't the predictions of the climate come true?
Well, Casey, that's a very good question. That's what people call earth changes. There were actually 20 readings that Casey made. It's actually less than 20, but most people say 20, that mentioned earth changes. And like the gentleman just said, a lot of these things that people consider earth changes were actually about strife in different areas of the world, that things would happen causing strife. As far as the earth changes in the ones that most people focus on are the disastrous things that are supposed to happen in California and also Japan. He said that Japan would suffer. He didn't use the word tsunamis, but he said inundations.
Mm-hmm.
And that part of California will fall into the ocean. Most people love to say, skeptics will say, there's a failed prediction that it was supposed to occur in 1998. Casey never said it was going to happen in 1998. He did say that things were going to begin in 1998 that could lead to these, but there's no set time for any of it. He said lots of other things in these predictions, too, like China was going to become a Christian-oriented country eventually. Interestingly, Andrew Collins is in China right now leading a tour, a large tour of Chinese ARE people. The ARE has gotten the Casey organization has gotten very, very big in China as well as in Japan. So I don't know if that'll come true or not, but there's loads of other predictions. The gentleman who just called about the macular degeneration, Casey said that one day we will overcome the deterioration of organs. We will be able to replace them. And so it's really interesting now that we're doing 3D printed hearts and 3D printed.
Oh, it is. It's amazing technology, Greg. We're going to come back and take final phone calls with you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. On tomorrow's Coast to Coast program, David Moore joins me to talk about the occult, followed by those Friday night into Saturday morning open lines right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Our final segment, Greg Little with us. We'll get to your calls as well. Greg, at what point did you become aware of Edgar Casey?
In the 1970s, and I was in actually an undergraduate. I didn't know much about him then. In graduate school, I got very interested. Around 1972 or so, I got real interested in Casey.
I started reading his books when I was about 15 or 16. He had a few out. I was fascinated by who he was.
Well, it is an intriguing story. It's unbelievable, actually, but it's a true story. There's been a lot of documentation of it. My big interest in the beginning was how he got these powers. He had a visitation at age 13 by what apparently is an angel, He was reading the Bible for the 13th time. He was reading the story of Manoah, which is a story about an angel appearing to Manoah. And an angel appeared to Edgar and said, what would he most like? And he said, to help people, especially children. And this angel said, it'll be yours, and disappeared. And after that, he began developing all these interesting powers. He could sleep on a book, and it would be memorized. That's called eidetic memory. It's just inexplicable.
I will always remember one of his recommendations to prevent cancer. He doesn't say cure. He says prevent. But the three almonds a day.
Yes.
It's amazing.
Yeah, there's loads of people that do that. Castor oil is the big deal. Japan, a group in Japan just made a movie theater movie about Edgar and castor oil, and it's still showing in theaters in Japan. It is shown a couple times in the U.S. They haven't released it to theaters yet, but it's about his remedies with castor oil, and cancer is involved with it. Very interesting stuff.
He's an amazing. He was an amazing person. Yeah. I would have loved to have interviewed him on this show.
That would have been very interesting. I've never thought about that. And I don't think he ever went on any radio shows. He was interviewed by many, many physicians who researched him, and they did a lot. They poked him with needles and things while he was in trances. And he actually got tired of it at some point.
Can you imagine what he would have been able to do with social media in terms of some of his readings and stuff?
Yeah, just unreal. Yeah. But he would have been brutally attacked by the medical profession.
Oh, my gosh.
And skeptics.
The FDA would have been chasing him all over the place.
Gosh, yeah, they've been brutal.
Let's go to the phones. Paul in Boston, Mass., to get us going. Hey, Paul.
Oh, yeah, every time I want to go to bed early, you get another knockout program. You know, I wonder, were you ever able to check any of your researches in any of the area that you researched against the Bible codes?
The answer to that would be no. You could ask some specific questions about it if you wanted to. I do know what the Bible codes are, and that's a very complicated subject.
It is.
Casey did talk about the Essenes before the Essenes were discovered, and he talked about what they wrote down on the Dead Sea Scrolls before the Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered, although he didn't call them the Dead Sea Scrolls. He said that they wrote down a lot of stuff and stored it.
But, yeah, the mathematicians that did that, Jewish scholars, they worked for the Navy Department.
Well, Casey didn't do anything in that
arena.
The Bible code. I do know what it is, but I can say that I don't think that was even around during Casey's lifetime. Didn't they start that in the 70s?
The Bible code?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe even a little later.
Like the 80s, perhaps.
Yeah, maybe even a little later.
Yeah, that came after Casey. I don't know what he would have said about. I have no idea what he would have said about that.
What year were the Dead Sea Scrolls discovered? In the 40s?
It was 19. I actually have it written down because I can't remember all these details. 1947. Casey died in 45. He talked about the Essenes in 171 readings, and he talked about what they had done in 1934, which was a long time before the Dead Sea Scrolls were ever discovered. But he talked a great deal about the Essenes. It was a very very important topic in his spiritual readings and his history around the time of Jesus and so on.
Was he very spiritual?
Casey as a human being, as Edgar Casey, was a fisherman, a smoker, and he loved to cook, and he loved to drink, and he loved to tell jokes. But he was very spiritual in that he was a Christian. He taught Sunday school, and apparently his Sunday school classes were so popular they couldn't get everybody in because...
I'd go to that.
Yes. Everywhere he went. In fact, these readings actually scared him as a Christian and his family, and they went through a lot of consternation and agony before they decided that they would continue to do the readings unless they hurt anyone. If they hurt anyone, they were going to quit. because, you know, some Christians would say, oh, all stuff psychic is evil. And so he was challenged by it. It was mainly the ancient past and the concept of reincarnation kind of freaked him and his family out.
Let's go to Mike in North Dakota, first-time caller. Michael, go ahead.
Hi. Glad to talk to you.
Thanks.
It's like, thanks for taking my call. God bless both of you. Really enjoy your show. And I was wondering if Edgar Cayce had any readings or anything about the caldera in the Yellowstone Park area.
I don't know if he said anything about Yellowstone. There's a caldera there, Greg, that could blow. They say it goes every 600,000 years, and it's overdue.
I am aware of the caldera, and that's a darn good question. I'll need to search the readings. I don't know. Yellowstone, I'm willing to bet that if I put Yellowstone into the readings, and like I said, members can do that, I'm willing to bet something will pop up, but I don't have it on in front of me, and I can't do it. But that is a great question. Somebody out there who's a member is probably doing that right now.
Did he talk about future wars or anything like that?
He did talk a lot about that. A lot of it actually came to pass. For example, he said before Japan entered World War II, he said that Japan was going to join with Germany, which in fact we know
it's happened,
of course. There were loads of other war things that he talked about, or countries that were going to come together. He talked about Libya, a lot about the Middle East. I'm trying to figure out here. There's so much that he talked about the countries like Libya and Egypt and Turkey and Syria. He said there would be tremendous numbers of conflicts in the Persian Gulf. In particular, those countries that I just mentioned. He didn't give the years, though. So we have seen Libya and Egypt and Turkey and Syria all have these serious problems. Now, why he mentioned them specifically and not a lot of other countries, who knows? But we've seen all that happen.
We sure have. Wayne in Tacoma, Washington. Hi, Wayne. Go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen. George, Sir George, and Greg.
Wayne, you've got a great radio voice.
You had a question on being able to have a better way to look into the crown to see things. And if I recall, John Hutchison had a device that he could aim at the ground, turn it on, and it would literally visibly open up the ground where you could see things underneath it, better than ground penetrating radar.
I am familiar with that. Hutchison actually has been on a lot of the Bermuda Triangle shows, actually a lot of the ones we've been on. And Hutchison has a theory about the Bermuda Triangle that involves some of the energies involved in these devices. I have not seen any of them work, but I am familiar with it. But I have never been in contact with him.
Okay, Wayne. Any follow-up question there?
Yeah, the question is, can you look at these mounds on Google Earth and see anything clearly?
You can see some of them. Go to Google Earth and put in Cahokia, C-A-H-O-K-I-A, and you will see the Cahokia mound then. And again, there's a big one there called Monk's Mound, but there's 80-some that are there, 60-some in the park itself. But you can see that. You can also see Poverty Point. That is in Louisiana. Those are all on Google Earth. And you can see the Mound Builders Country Club in Newark, Ohio, which that's worth seeing, too. I call it a country club because it is, but they built a golf course where this circle and octagon is, and that actually turned out to be a good thing because it's preserved it and kept it in pristine condition.
We've got Carl in the Bronx. Hey, Carl, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, George and Greg, for taking my call.
Thank you.
I have some interesting questions to ask. And my first one is, you said that eugenics was the reason why the Smithsonian is not showing the skeletons that were found in various places, the giant skeletons. But I wanted to know, why would the Vatican and foreign governments as well censor the skeletons when they're found? What is their reason for censoring the skeletons? Okay.
I didn't hear the second part. I heard you say the Smithsonian and eugenics. Who? What was the second part? Who was denying it?
Why would the Vatican and the farm government censor the skeletons as well? What is their reason for censoring the skeletons? If the Smithsonian is doing it for eugenics reasons.
Well, the eugenics reason began in the 1800s, and it went to about 1940, and I think they've just continued it. It is a way to say the Native Americans were nothing special. They were not superior. They weren't inferior to other races, but they were not superior. So they didn't have a group of very tall leaders who perhaps were some sort of a human hybrid. That is the theory there. I don't know anything about the Vatican denying the giants. Are you talking about biblical giants? You're not talking about the Native American ones. You're talking about biblical giants, right?
Biblical giants, where I've researched that they also keep it a secret. They also censor the whole idea of giant skeletons.
Wow. Well, that one I don't know about. I don't know the Vatican denies it. The idea of the Nephilim and, you know, the Watchers and the Nephilim and so on, and the Bible says there were giants in the earth in those days. I don't know why they deny that. That makes no sense. You're right. It makes no sense at all.
We've got Walter in Pennsylvania. Hey, Walt, go ahead.
Hi, George. It's always great to be on with you, buddy.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you.
George, as far as the giants go, P.T. Barnum had, you know, displays of giants, the Cardiff Giant, and they had the Piltdown Man, which, you know, needless to say, were hoaxes. Now, as far as I know, the largest or the tallest man in modern times was a gentleman by the name of Michael Waddell back in the early 1930s. When he died, he was only 29 years old. He was 8'9".
Yeah.
Now, George, he got to be so tall that he couldn't stand in a stiff wind, so they had to concoct a brace for him that he would wear around his legs and would extend up his back. Now, George, you know, in biblical times, you know, there was no science, no biochemistry. They didn't even know about molecules. Now, the natural explanation, the modern explanation for this is pituitary anomalies.
True. That happened to a fellow in Illinois by the name of Robert Wadlow.
Yeah.
Who they had to bury in a piano, I think.
Yeah, I think that's the guy that I'm referring to. Now,
right.
George, naturally, in biblical times, there was no science, so they, you know, they concocted these stories of, you know, angels, fallen angels coming down to earth and mating with human females, creating these Nephilim. But, George, this is all mythology.
Oh, I don't know about that, Walter. It may be mythology, but there could be a lot of truth to it, too. What do you think, Greg?
Well, that's what skeptics believe. He's giving a very good description of what skeptics believe.
Sure.
They use the term mythology. Carl Jung actually talked about myths, and he said all myths have a kernel of truth in them. There's always some truth in mythology. But he's correct in that some people have concocted some things. But would he say that the story of David versus Goliath, that Goliath had gigantism and a pituitary disorder and he couldn't stand up? Goliath was actually quite a warrior. And there are people today that are, they probably don't have gigantism, but they are very, very huge individuals.
Well, yeah, the Robert Wadlow, who died at the age of 22.
Yes, he had gigantism. We know that.
Yep, he was 8'11" tall.
And that's just astonishing if you think about it.
Weighed 439 pounds, but he still looked skinny because he was so tall. He died of an infection of his left ankle.
Wow.
That's what killed him at 22.
Yeah. Amazing.
Crazy. Anyways, we're almost out of time, Greg. Let's keep in touch. What is your latest book going to be called again when it comes out in September?
That will be called Denisovan, Denisovan, Origins, with Andrew Collins. Has a subtitle that includes Ancient America and Giants and Hybrids. It'll be somewhat similar, but also very, very different to Graham Hancock's current book. Graham is aware of us very much.
Good guy.
And we'll see where that goes, and maybe then you can get Andrew on or me, and we'll talk about it all.
You've got a deal. Thanks, Greg. I really appreciate it. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.